Welcome, everybody, to the Transportation Committee this afternoon.
Talk more about it.
Kind of a busy Monday, but glad to have everybody with us. A few different bills with us in House File 268. That's my bill. We may or may not get to today, but a couple different bills that we wanted to introduce some different topics. Important. The first bill we will have will be 1214, Representative Hansen. Then we'll do 192, Representative Burkle. And then I think we'll probably just go straight to the 494 bill and probably won't get to the 268 bill today. Start with the minutes. Representative Olson, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I would move their approval.
Representative Olson moves the minutes of February 26, 2025. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Get my papers organized here. Representative Hansen, welcome to the Transportation Committee. You are not a freshman, so we, Representative Myers, he's not required to or highly encouraged to bring treats, but we are glad to have you here with us. It's an important bill that we heard a little bit about last year, and I'm happy to hear it today, and I appreciate you and your testifiers bringing the bill forward. I will move the bill for you. Representative Kosnick moves House File 1214 to the General Register. And we also have just kind of a technical amendment. I've spoken with Lead Cagle about it, and just to add a little clarity of the funds to pay for it, make sure that we have that in the form that the author would like. Without objection, Representative Hansen, I'll move the House File 1214A1 amendment. Sure, Mr. Lee, if you could give us just a little overview on that amendment. Just wanted to verify the funds is basically what it is.
Mr. Chair and members, in the in House File 1214, under the current language before the amendment, the sources from the Transportation Advancement Account, and currently Hennepin County receives every fiscal year about 7 to 9 million a year. The A1 amendment would change the source from the Transportation Advancement Account and instead have the source be the County Transportation Sales and Use Tax. That is Minnesota Statutes 297A.993. Just some history on that sales and use tax. It was enacted in 2008, changed in 2013 to allow the county to levy it with a vote of the board, and its uses are transportation purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. With that, I will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Hansen, please introduce your bill, and if it's the testifiers before you testify, just introduce yourselves. I'll acknowledge you. We'll speak to the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm before you today with House File 1214. I wish it was something that I didn't have to be before you, but we have this ongoing challenge with the Washington Avenue Bridge. We did hear this bill in capital investment last year, and I think it was in the bonding bill that did not make it. You know, it's a somber bill relating with suicide prevention, and you're going to hear concerns raised about, you know, why we need this bill. I know there will probably be differences on the source of money, but I hope that we can agree on that this is something that needs to happen. I will just highlight again the urgency of this particular situation, that a temporary barrier was put up around Thanksgiving, And since that time, the temporary barrier has deterred five people from attempting to end their life. So that shows the risk that's involved without fixing this. You know, members, I often drive into the Capitol over the High Bridge, and the community rallied on the High Bridge to put those barriers on it, and that has reduced, if not eliminated, the loss of life relating to that. So you're going to hear today testimony again about the need. I appreciate the hearing and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And which testifier would you like to start with? With us, MJ Weiss Blair.
Correct, yes.
You are the mother of Kayla Ray Gable. Please introduce yourself just to make sure and proceed with your testimony. I appreciate you being here today.
Yes, my name is MJ Weiss Blair, and I'm the mother of Kayla Gable. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill. On November 9th, 2023, Kayla chose death by suicide on the Washington Avenue Bridge, leaving behind a 2-year-old son and 3-year-old daughter, and many, many others who will never forget who she was and who she would have become if she had only been forced to pause and realize that there is hope and help out there even in times of darkness. On November 11th, 2023, for the first time in my life, I took a walk on that bridge. I saw a frightening problem, a problem that has existed for a very long time. And I knew that I needed to speak up for Kayla and for others who are no longer with us. I was not sure who to turn to and who could possibly fix this problem, so I just called SAVE, Suicide Awareness, Voices of Education. Eric, team members of SAVE, and John Apitz in January 2024, it was the right call for me to make. They helped me highlight this tragic problem, and we nearly succeeded in getting suicide barriers placed on the bridge last year. We spoke to many of you in hearings and in your offices. We noted that the Washington Avenue Bridge was built over 50 years ago, and at that time, even as the pedestrian railings stand, they offered no barrier or support measures to protect those who walk on that bridge. I shared now how I lost Kayla, but I also learned that 2 to 5 people die by suicide on that bridge, and there are no barriers on that bridge to stop people who may be struggling with some form of mental distress. The tragedy is real, and the numbers are frightening. So along with SAVE, we formed Kayla's Hope, helping others, protecting everyone. Together with my family, my friends, and others who have felt the same tragedy and SAVE, we have made it our mission to stop this bridge from being a suicide hotspot. Last session, funding for those suicide barriers was included in the bonding bill. Unfortunately, it did not pass, and we know of others who have been lost since then. In May 2024, since May 2024, we've been working with the U of M to get some sort of temporary barriers in place. Shortly after President Hunningham took office, she took the initiative to have a chain link fence put in place on the bridge. This is only a temporary solution, but it has already saved lives. I appreciate Rick Hansen's continued help in getting this problem fixed. I appreciate the work that Senator Dziedzic did to help us and the work that Senator Dibble is doing now. I, my family, and the folks, the SAVE team, deeply appreciate your leadership in helping move this bill forward and helping us save lives. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and we are sorry for your loss as a father of 2 daughters. I couldn't imagine. Next, we have Mr. Mischke with SAVE. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Eric Mischke. I'm the CEO of SAVE, Suicide Awareness, Voices of Education. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. The urgent need for enhanced barrier protection, including suicide prevention measures on this public structure that's located at the University of Minnesota. For 36 years, SAVE has been committed to preventing suicide through what we call our 4 pillars, education and training, advocacy, support for suicide loss survivors, and lethal means safety. Each one of those pillars touches this problem and the need for us to find a solution. As MJ said, the University of Minnesota has been a leader here, with the president having installed these temporary fences right before Thanksgiving of last year. The data is clear. Barriers work. When installed, suicide rates at those locations where they've had problems drop dramatically. And most individuals do not go out and seek another location. The data is also clear. If someone who has attempted suicide survived, there's a 90% chance they will not attempt again. Other communities have recognized this and have taken action. Tennessee installed barriers on the Natchez Trace Bridge, ugly chain link fence with barbed wire on the top of it. In 2022, there has not been a suicide since then. They are now working on a permanent solution. The state of Florida with the Sunshine Skyway Bridge saw the same type of results when they installed a life-saving barrier on that bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge is something we're all familiar with, and they have now finally, after decades, finally installed several different types of barriers to prevent suicide. The evidence is incontrovertible. Barriers protect pedestrians, they protect cyclists, and they interrupt suicidal impulsivity. And that's what these barriers are all about. It's about interrupting that suicidal impulsivity so that person has time to rethink that decision and to allow good Samaritans to come forward and to provide aid and assistance. Frankly, we believe the policy needs to become law, not a recommendation, not guidelines, and must be enshrined ultimately in Minnesota statute. Any new construction or reconstruction of a tall public structure in the state of Minnesota ought to have these types of barriers integrated into its design, into its budget, and ultimately into its construction. This can't be left to a manual, can't be left to recommendations, best practices, or waived because some other public entity comes out and concerns about aesthetics. The fact is, this is a common sense life-saving measure. The Representative Hansen's leadership here in bringing this bill forward makes a choice available to all of us to provide hope to people, to be able to make a difference, help prevent suicide, and save lives. So on behalf of SAVE and those that we serve, we ask that you move quickly and approve this measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mischke. We have two other... Mischke. Is that better?
Fishy. Mischke. Mine was squishy.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry about that. We do have two other testifiers, students at the University of Minnesota. If you want to come up together and just, you could, whoever wants to go first, let you decide. We have Riley Hetland and William Luther. Who would like to go first?
I can go first. I'm Riley.
Okay, Riley, please introduce yourself just for the record. It's being audio recorded, and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Riley Hetland, and I'm a sophomore at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I currently serve as our undergraduate student government's director of civic engagement, but today I'm speaking as someone whose personal community has felt the repercussions of not having these added safety measures on the Washington Avenue Bridge. Last October, one of the people I went to high school with went missing from his dorm. And several days later, he was found dead in the river. I want to clarify that I did not know him personally, but I did know his friends very, very well. Seeing your friends grieve the loss of a friend is one thing, but seeing your friends sickened with guilt, feeling like they should have done more, should have reached out, should have been there, is entirely different. No 19-year-old, no freshman in college, no person should ever have to feel like that. A Star Tribune article said that 3 or 4 people jump off of the Washington Avenue Bridge every year. This year, 2 people did in 1 week. After those 2 people, the university placed temporary measures in place. But we need this funding to be permanent, to make sure that these measures are permanent, to make sure that no people are able to jump off of this bridge. I know very well that infrastructure like this is not the whole story when it comes to suicide prevention, but I urge this legislature to support HF 1214 so we can prevent future communities from grieving the losses of their friends and family. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hetland. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we have William Luther. Again, reintroduce yourself for the tape. Yep, and pull that microphone nice close to you and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm William Luther. I'm a first year at the University of Minnesota. I'm also the state coordinator for the University of Minnesota Undergraduate Student Government. On behalf of the 30,000 undergraduate students at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, we urge this legislature to support HF 1214. In the November of this year, two of our students tragically ended their lives by jumping off the Washington Avenue Bridge. If you were to come onto the University of Minnesota campus, you would see only 4-foot railings lining the edges of the bridge, which crosses the Mississippi River. Thankfully for the university, they put a much taller chain link fence, but as my colleague over here has said, as my fellow students over here said, that we need some more permanent solutions. After that tragic, however, the temporary measures need permanent solutions. Although a higher fence may not stop all suicide attempts, enhancing these safety features on the bridge can mean the difference between someone committing suicide or thinking about their actions and potentially saving their life. These features will also make it safer for the hundreds of students and pedestrians that cross the bridge every day. Enhance safety on the bridge. A lot of students use the bridge to get between our West Bank and East Bank campuses. We have also worked with the City Council to get funding for similar safety measures on the 10th Avenue Bridge, which is another bridge that connects Dinkytown to our West Bank campus. But we urge this legislature to support this bill so we can get those safety measures added onto the Washington Avenue Bridge. Again, we strongly support HF 1214 so that we can support students' well-being, public safety, and the future lives of students and Minnesota residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Luther and Ms. Hetland. Are there any other testifiers? Or actually, we have Commissioner Lundy. Are there any other public testifiers? Anybody else wishing to testify? Are you Mr. Lundy? Commissioner Lundy, welcome to the committee. For the audio, please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Kosnick and Representative Hansen, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jeff Lundy. I am a Hennepin County Commissioner representing District 1. I'm also a proud parent of a third-year student at the U of M and a second kid who was just accepted in the honors program, but I am not, for the record, saying he's decided to attend the U of M, or else I'll be in trouble at another level. We want to thank the author for his work on this legislation, the family members and the students for this advocacy in the U of M for their partnership. The Washington Avenue Bridge connects the east and west campuses of the University of Minnesota with cars and light rail traveling on the lower deck, and pedestrians and cyclists using the upper deck, including the enclosed walking space to protect them from the weather. The county owns the bridge, and the university shares responsibilities for the parts of the pedestrian deck. The pedestrian deck in particular was built for the benefit of students. We want to make sure students and others using the bridge have the safest possible experience. The county shares the university's goal to make improvements on the bridge that mitigate the risk of suicide. We worked with the university to get the temporary solution up. We know a permanent solution is needed and is justified. We've been working with you to support their capital investment fund, a request to fund those improvements. That request is actually part of the Hennepin County state legislative platform. We memorialize our partnerships with the U of M in there. Last session, the university sought funding through asset preservation capital investment dollars. And the request is included in the governor's bonding recommendations again this year. This project will have a regional and a statewide impact, and we see capital investment funds as the best source of funding. Finally, we just want to commit that we look forward to continue to working with the University of Minnesota, Representative Hansen, the families, students, and all those who have lost loved ones here or other places as we continue, I think, to look at how can we make changes statewide. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Commissioner Lundy. Stick around. I imagine there may be some questions for you. Any other members of the public wishing to testify? We can go to member comments, questions. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this forward. This is it's a very important and a very delicate situation. You know, about 15 years ago, I used to run across this bridge every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 o'clock with the Army. And 15 years ago, I was looking at it saying, oh boy, that railing seems really small. And I got a little nervous running in a pack of soldiers. So, my question, well, I guess this is kind of a pontificating if this has been a problem for 60 years, why are we depending on a bonding bill in order to make this happen? We've seen over the last couple of years that bonding bills are one of the most unregular bill in the state of Minnesota. Why isn't Hennepin County already taking care of this? Why haven't they already taken care of this? And why isn't this being taken care of now as opposed to depending on a bonding bill normally? I think this is a great way of dealing with the problem, and so I really appreciate you doing it this way instead of trying to depend on a capital investment bill.
Representative Hansen, and I'm sure we'll go to the commissioner as well. Do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson. You know, I wish we would have had a bill last year. I wish we could have passed it. I wish a lot of things, but having been here for a while, sometimes wishes don't come true, and that we need to do what we can. I know there's disagreements about this, but we need to get this done, and the sooner we can get it done, the better it is. So working out the dollars, working with our colleagues and the other body, and hopefully we can get to something that everyone can agree on, because we need to get it done. And I'm worried that we wait until May or June, and you know, does the temporary fence, how many more does it stop? So I hope we can come together and find some solution here to get this done quicker, sooner rather than later.
I'd be interested in the commissioner's response. Would you like him to restate the question? Please. Yes. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question. So 15 years ago, I was running across this bridge with the Army, and I was thinking at that point in time, these are really, really low fences. This is a 60-year-old bridge. And Hennepin County, from my understanding, owns it. Why have we not taken care of this over 60 years? Why is this now just becoming a problem? Is it because now people are willing to talk loud enough about it? Or basically, that's the question, is why hasn't Hennepin County taken care of this before? And why are we depending on a capital investment bill to take care of it when we should be taking care of it today like this?
Commissioner Lundy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's a good question. I think, you know, you talked about it going back 60 years. I think our feelings and how we've evolved and how we treat, you know, mental health challenges and how we look at things, lessons learned. And I think, as you heard testimony earlier, the ability to provide barriers, now we know, and we have documentation that says, hey, if there's a barrier, people might take that minute to think, and that minute to think might save a life. And so I think as everything has evolved, we continue to evolve how we look at that. Hearing the talk about the statewide requirement for all new construction, I think, is certainly something that makes sense. We do that all the time. We talk about ADA accessibility. And so I think, you know, when you have tall structures. So I think for us, it's just about finding the right source. We're going to continue to work with you. We've worked with them all along. We take this very seriously. And so we just believe that the right source is the one, the preservation fund.
Okay, stay close by here. You can stay in the seat there. Representative Sensenmuir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing the bill. I remember when I was working in schools a number of years ago and being taught about suicide prevention, and the two things they told us to look for if a student, you know, talks to us about having mental health challenges and talking about suicide is, do they have a plan, and then do they have the opportunity, right? And so the opportunity could be, do they have pills in their house? It could be, do they have access to a gun? And it sounds like for the University of Minnesota students, it could be, do they have a bridge where it doesn't give students that pause, right? It doesn't give them that minute to think about, okay, do I want to do this? What are the implications? So I think this bill makes a lot of sense. I think it sounds like it's really needed. You know, I think we know that young people across our state are hurting, right? That the pandemic, the lingering effects of that on young people's mental health, we're going to be seeing that for a long, long time. So, you know, thank you for bringing this bill. As someone who also has a bridge crossing the Mississippi in my district, Franklin Avenue, not far from this. I know that we've talked about suicide on that bridge as well. So I think this is a needed bill. Thank you for bringing it.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I made a comment about my 15 years, 13 and change almost in the Army, and we lose a lot of soldiers. The number is 22 a day is what we lose in the United States as opposed to just veterans as per suicide. I've made it very clear in the Veterans Committee that this is a big deal for me, and I want our state to look at it wholeheartedly. And so, Mr. Chair, to signify the importance of this bill, I would like a roll call vote to the floor.
A roll call has been requested, and roll call will be granted. Commissioner Lundy, I recognize or interpret your statements that, yes, it would be great to have state funds instead of your county paying for it. It's my understanding Hennepin County owns the bridge. This has been a problem that's been going on. I'll ask Representative Hansen or Commissioner Lundy, how long have we been aware of the suicide issue being a problem on this bridge?
Mr. Chair, with the constituents' contact, I was generally aware, but having it reach into our district and other districts, I think that's relative in the last few years for me.
My understanding is that this has been going on for many, many years, maybe 40 years. Is that the correct understanding, Commissioner Lundy?
Mr. Chair, so I'd say my first meeting and awareness of it happened in 2023, when I think as the families were rightfully asking the U to do things, we met with the U and looked at different solutions, and then we start to be aware of the data. And so I think you would ask the question, when did I become aware? And I think that's really when I think it's been brought to the forefront, and I think that's provided the impetus for our desire to get something done.
Thank you, Commissioner and Representative. My understanding that is this has been a problem for a little bit longer. Representative Anderson, you'll have a question in just a second, but I recognize that it would be better for Hennepin County if the state paid for it. You're rolling the dice with people's lives by waiting for a bonding bill. You saw what happened last year. Luckily, the University of Minnesota and the new president finds this as an important issue and put up a temporary fence. I think it's wholly appropriate that Hennepin County maintain the safety of their infrastructure, including this particular bridge. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To your question, I was a student at the University of Minnesota almost 40 years ago, and there were suicides off the bridge. So, thank you.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Commissioner Lundy. And maybe you know this or maybe you don't. Just because some of the testifiers have talked about some of the data that's coming out, and obviously we have many bridges over the Mississippi, as Representative Sensomira had mentioned too. We've been talking about funding. We've been talking about this as an important issue. So I'm just trying to get my head around how much of this is like a structural issue and how much is happening because this is next to the university and there's just more pedestrian traffic. Is it the heights of a railing there? Do we have any other data that's available for the risks on other bridges?
Representative Jones, is that for Representative Hansen or Commissioner?
Either one who has an answer.
Okay. Who would like to take that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would bring up Mr. Hansen. Mishy. I believe they have data in terms of kind of there have been debates about, should we talk about things and or not talk about them? Do we have impacts? What the I'll use my example that I cited earlier, that the high bridge, you have very tall bars that go up. They were put up very quickly. It's very difficult to climb those bars. Sometimes when you see on bridges, there's the internal curving, which makes it another little barrier of time. But I would defer to Mr. Mishy.
Thank you for the question.
Mr. Mishy.
I'm sorry, Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for the question. What I would tell you is that part of the reason why this particular structure is so dangerous is that 70% of the population of the University of Minnesota, suicide happens to be the top one or two means of death for them. And so every single day you are having these students walk across this particular structure, which was not designed to address pedestrian safety, much less try to be a preventative measure for suicide. If we look at the Mendota Heights Bridge, which was just recently renovated and reconstructed, many of you may have looked at that bridge and wondered what happened when we had guidance that was supposed to require that these enhanced barriers Well, what happened there is what we understand is that there was another unit of government came forward and said, we need to be more concerned about the historical and aesthetic issues associated with this bridge than the need to protect pedestrian safety. That's a real miss on the part of public policy. And the fact is, that's why we really strongly are going to be advocating that there needs to be a statewide policy to address new construction and major reconstruction. But the design itself is what creates the risk. It's the same design issue that was at the hybrids that created the risk. And so there is a science behind designing barriers to prevent suicide, right? It's all about interrupting the impulsivity, making it difficult for somebody to scale. And the reality is that we can build tall public structures today and engineer them in ways that are aesthetically pleasing while at the same time safe for pedestrians and cyclists and anybody who may be struggling with a crisis. So because of the unique feature of this bridge and its location in the population, this makes it particularly hazardous for that population.
Thank you, Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then we'll move to Representative Kraft.
I just have one more question. Particularly around, so currently this project is $15 million, and I'm wondering if you could speak to help us understand, is that just like taller fencing along the edge of the bridge, or is there, are there additional things? Help us understand what the safety measures are.
Mr.
Chair, members of the committee, I'd have to defer to the University of Minnesota about what exactly the totality of that $15 million covers. I will tell you that based on conversations with Hennepin County and the university, the barriers themselves, just the barriers themselves, right, including lighting and things like that, you know, maybe somewhere between $5 to $8 to $9 million, but I'd really have to defer to the university since that figure came directly from them.
Commissioner Lundy, do you have some comments on the design question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just wanted to add that, you know, part of that process is it does carry light rail, it does have bus, it does have car, vehicle, pedestrian, so it is, I don't want to say it's a delicate bridge, but it's, there's details. And so we know we can work through those. We can provide the type of safety mechanisms that all of us want. We just know it's a process. And so I think from dollar amount, I think what we've talked about is in that ballpark, but we know it's more than just barriers. We have to look at the whole structure given the multi-use of that facility, and we will. We'll do that.
Good. Representative Jones?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. It's just helpful to know, given the number of bridges, again, over the Mississippi, so thinking about how much of this is a risk along other bridges and how much we should be thinking about potential funding for those, too. So thank you.
Commissioner, I appreciate the question. It is important to discuss the design and cost. Those are all factors that need to be considered. And your hesitance for Hennepin County, representing Hennepin County, $15 million, give or take, on the actual final cost. My understanding is Hennepin County has a significant amount in their transportation fund to handle this. Is that part of the issue, or you just would rather the state or somebody else pay for it rather than address the dire safety needs?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the fund you're referring to is designated for transit. It was a sales tax approved by the board, and as a former mayor, now commissioner, when you pass something, you tell the voters what it's used for. That's use would not have been used for this type of activity. And so we do believe that this is a statewide benefit. We do, I've heard the discussion, there's a lot of discussions, you know, it's new construction is easier. It's the retrofitting, I think these barriers that we all agree is important to many bridges. And so I think having a funding mechanism that fits for that is going to be important to address at the start.
Thank you, Commissioner, I appreciate that. Members, I would just say that, you know, the sales tax for transit and transportation needs of Hennepin County is the hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion or more. And so asking Hennepin County to maintain the safety of their constituents and on their property, their bridge, I don't think the $15 million that's being asked in this bill, and even if it is a little bit more, it's pretty insignificant to the revenues that they have. Hearing no other, Representative Kraft, you did not have a question, correct? Hearing no other, Oh, Senator, Representative Senator Mira.
Thank you.
Well, this will be our last comment, then we'll go to a vote.
I'll make it quick. I just want to say that, you know, I think we should continue the conversation around where the funding comes from. You know, I would say I think this is incredibly important. I think there are a lot of incredibly important bonding projects, and I think the DFL is certainly committed to getting a bonding bill done this year for this kind of project and others like it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. A roll call has been requested. We will move to a vote.
Chair Kosnick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Myers.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Fogelman. Yes. Representative Green.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Ream.
Aye.
Representative Sensenmura.
Aye.
Representative Scraba.
Aye.
Representative Tabke.
Aye.
The motion for House File 1214, as amended, to be referred to the General Register, having 15 ayes, 0 nays, the motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, Commissioner. Members, next we will move to House File 192, Representative Burkle. Proceed to the testimony, and we have some illustrious former mayor, former representative, now mayor, who will join us on Zoom, and I think a couple other testifiers here in the committee room. Representative Burkle, I will move your House File 192 to be laid over. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative John Brook of District 1A, Northwest Minnesota. So I have House File 182 in front of you. The concept of the bill comes from conversations and interactions with a number of folks in local government, from the smallest cities to the largest. Smallest cities like Roseau, Morrow, and Fauston up in my neck of the woods, as well as larger cities like Richfield, who you hear from today, and even Minneapolis. When a DOT road comes through a community, there's what's called a cost sharing or a cost participation policy. And a lot of times when this happens to a small city, their local money, such as dollars they get through municipal state aid or other funds, gets depleted because of requirements based on MnDOT. And so with that, the bill is very simple. It basically requires the local municipalities do not pay for these cost participations, and it's picked up by MnDOT. I also want to mention that there's currently a concerted effort going on at MnDOT to address their cost participation policies. And I want to recognize, in particular, Transportation District Engineer back home, J.T. Anderson, up in our area, District 2, for his efforts to work out the problem and work with folks back home on our current pilot project for the city of Roseau. So I'm not going to go on and on. There are a number of letters of support in your packets, and we have a lot of great testifiers here. So I'm going to let them tell you the reasons why this is a good bill, and I'll defer to my testifiers, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Burkle. I do note that there is it's an open appropriation, which we're laying it over in the committee. Otherwise, I don't really love those, even just putting in a placeholder of where you might, a dollar amount that you might suggest. We will, we'll start with Representative now Mayor Dan Fabian, I think from Zoom. Mr. Mayor, can you hear us?
I can, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. I want to thank you for hearing the bill.
Yeah, hopefully you proceed. Can hear me. Make sure you introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony. And I hope the weather's nice in Florida or wherever you're at.
Wherever. Yeah. Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Fabian. I'm currently the mayor of the city of Roseau. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill. I want to thank the committee members for participating in the hearing today. And I want to thank especially John Burkle for bringing this bill forward this year. This actually started a year ago when Representative Burkle had a bill that was jacketed and didn't get a hearing and so forth. But it's really important to us in the city of Roseau. So it started a year ago, or a little over a year ago. We were informed by MnDOT that our local cost participation share was going to be around $400,000, and that was based on estimates from the previous year. And a part of that cost was the result of changes being made to the footprint of Highway 11 coming through Roseau west of the bridge going over the Roseau River. After the flood of 2002, our infrastructure in that part of town was all replaced. So the sewer and water is new in 2003, I believe. Then, because of ADA compliance, the sidewalks have to be widened. And, of course, they can't be widened into the storefronts, so they're being widened into Highway 11. And then that puts the infrastructure that we have under the footprint of the sidewalk, as I understand. Then as a result of that, we have to move our infrastructure. And that's concerning to us because it's perfectly functional, but we were told that we have to do it anyway. So after some discussions with MnDOT, and I wanted to back up what Representative Burkle said about J.T. Anderson and the rest of the staff up in Northwest Minnesota for MnDOT District 2. They've been wonderful to work with, and J.T. was the one who was able to figure out a way to get the pilot that Representative Burkle was talking about. Our city council took a stand, and we said, well, we're not going to pay $400,000, and because of that, that's when that pilot came around. Got our share down to about $185,000, and then in December now, this past December, at the same meeting that we passed our budget for this coming year, or the year that we are currently in, we were also notified by MnDOT, so we passed that budget. Then in January at our first meeting, we were notified by MnDOT after we passed our budget that our cost share, local share, was going to go up by about $55,000. So we're up to about $255,000 now for our local share. And again, we appreciate the pilot project that they put in place. But when you go and talk to the folks, say in Warroad and Faustin and Baudette, in Warroad, the mayor over there told me they're going to be on the hook for about $2.5 million. And over in the small city of Baudette, a little over around 1,000 people, they're going to be on the hook for $3.5 million. There's a letter in your packet today, I believe, from our community development coordinator, Todd Peterson, his name is, and he outlines it in there, the costs and some of the reasons for this bill. We have another Highway 89 project coming up through the city of Roseau in 2028, and it's projected now that our local share is going to be around $800,000. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be willing to answer any questions that people have. We recognize the importance of a good transportation system in the state. We value our relationship and our partnership with MnDOT and all the people that do all the work that they do. But as you'll hear from other testifiers, the local cost participation has become pretty unmanageable for a lot of particularly small communities, but I know large communities too. I testified a couple of weeks ago in the Senate on the same language that Senator Jasinski has, and I was glad to see that Senator Dibble was signed on to the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, yeah. Now Mayor Fabian. We'll move on to other testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burkle.
Do we have Mary Supple, Mayor of Richfield? And let's try to keep our testimony to 2 minutes or less so we can get through this. Again, this bill is just being laid over. There will be no vote taken on this. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony. Again, brevity is appreciated.
Good afternoon, Chair Kosnick and committee members. My name is Mary Supple, and I'm the mayor of the city of Richfield, testifying on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House File 192. Richfield has a predominantly residential tax base and is uniquely bounded or bisected by four state highways, 62, 494, 77, and 35W. Richfield applauds reinvestments in this infrastructure. However, the current state highway one-size-fits-all cost-share policies fail to consider the financial capacities of local agencies to pay for regional projects and can consume the finances or debt capacities of communities who largely have no say in the construction timing or design of these projects. We believe that cities face a disproportionate share of the public investment burden for these regional state highway projects, which facilitate travel and commerce through, not into, our local communities. How does the current cost share structure affect a city like Richfield? One strategy has been to advance our state annual municipal state aid, or MSA, allotments to meet our cost participation obligations, instead of using that money to maintain our local MSA streets. To put this into perspective, from 2003 to 2023, Richfield spent 66%, or $17.9 million of our MSA dollars on projects to rebuild or rehabilitate roads that we do not own, and 22%, or $5.9 million on the 77th Street underpass to facilitate state highway congestion relief in advance of the current 494 reconstruction project, leaving just 12%, or $3.4 million for maintenance and repair of our local streets on the MSA system in the 20-year period. Thank you to Representative Burkle for carrying this bill, and to Chair Kosnick and the committee for allowing me time to testify in support of House File 192. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Next we have, I think jointly, the mayors of Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park, April Graves and Mark Culver, I believe. And then after that we'll have Elk River Public Works, Justin Femright, and then we'll have a representative from MnDOT. Welcome to the committee. State your names and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, thank you. My name is Mayor April Graves. Good morning, Chair Kosnick and members of the committee. Thank you for taking the time to hear my testimony today. As I said, I am the mayor of the city of Brooklyn Center. I'm here to speak in favor of House File 192, which would remove the local cost share requirements for state highway projects. Brooklyn Center is crisscrossed by state highways, Highway I-94, 252, 100, and I-694, all run through our city, and while these highways provide access for our residents, their upkeep is an enormous cost for our city. For example, MnDOT is in the early design stages for the Highway 252 I-94 project, whose goal is to convert Highway 252 to a freeway. Based on MnDOT's current cost share policy, the early cost estimates would require Brooklyn Center to pay upwards of $20 million for this project. To put this in perspective, in the typical year, Brooklyn Center spends $3 to $4 million on street improvements. Under the current cost share policy, our city would need five times that amount for the 252 I-94 project. Brooklyn Center is a community with a great deal of need. Our community has experienced significant disinvestment over the last several decades, eroding its tax base. No matter how hard we shake our couch cushions or how creatively we stretch our roughly $1.5 million in annual municipal state aid funding, we cannot come up with this. Cities routinely delay local projects and run up debt obligations to meet MnDOT's local cost share requirements. During the 2023 legislative session, MnDOT and Minnesota counties received millions in additional transportation funding. Unfortunately, cities have not seen a commensurate increase, with both MnDOT and Hennepin County racing to get projects in the ground. With their new funding, our local assets will be neglected as we struggle to keep pace with state and county cost share requirements. Lastly, I really want to emphasize that time is of the essence for Brooklyn Center regarding the timing of this bill. This fall, Highway 252-I-94 project will be entered into the State Transportation Improvement Program, MnDOT's near-term planning for upcoming construction projects. If this bill is not passed this session, based on the current effective date language, Brooklyn Center would be required to pay. We thank you for listening and urge you and your colleagues to make House File 192 a reality.
Thank you, Mayor. Next, we'll move over to the Brooklyn Park Mayor. Not the Mayor?
Thank you, Chair. Chair Kosnick and members, clearly
I am not demoted.
Mayor Winston from Brooklyn Park. Unfortunately, the mayor was unable to join us this afternoon, and I will do my best to fill in his rather large shoes.
Yep. And keep it brief, please.
Of course. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment on this. Brooklyn Park stands with its colleague Brooklyn Center, as well as cities across the state, in supporting this bill and its efforts to hold MnDOT responsible for the true costs of their projects. In Brooklyn Park, we are fortunate to have several key transportation corridors supporting our community region. However, those transportation corridors also provide significant cost to the city when major projects occur, and a good example of this, obviously, is Highway 252. We're strongly in support of the safety benefits of this project and the opportunity to better connect our city across this expressway. Current local cost estimates, as you heard, for this project exceed well over $30 million for local agencies using current MnDOT cost participation policies. Even as a city engineer, I was surprised to see that the cost participation policy for expressway conversions to freeways limit MnDOT's participation on these types of projects to a maximum of 85% of the cost, which means that the local agencies have to pick up somewhere between 15 to 50% of the cost of converting a traffic signal to an overchange or to an interchange. That is a substantial cost for any city, whether it is a state aid city or not. Also, many components such as trails and sidewalks require additional local cost participation, even though MnDOT does tout itself as an organization that supports all modes of transportation and a complete streets philosophy. In Brooklyn Park, like Richfield, we are intentionally holding back our spending on our municipal state aid dollars in order to build up a balance in our account to offset these expenses when they actually occur. And even though these MSA funds are intended to be spent on our local state aid street system, Brooklyn Park, like most cities in Minnesota, need these funds to pay our local cost participation expenses on regional projects, such as the trunk highway projects. This results in a funding gap for our own system that we must make up with property taxes and other funding sources, or, as is often the case, delay the maintenance on our own roads. Therefore, we strongly support MnDOT using their existing funding to pay for the full cost of the required trunk highway expenses, including public utility relocations. We also strongly recommend that MnDOT and the legislature identify the state statutes that will need to be modified in order to allow MnDOT to use their current funding to pay for the local costs on trunk highway projects. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. We still have the Elk River Public Works. Mr. Femright. Welcome. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony and try to keep it at 2 minutes or less.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Krosnick, members of the committee. My name is Justin Femright. I'm the Public Works Director and Chief Engineer for the City of Elk River and recently retired from a seven-year term on the Executive Committee for the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. I'm here today to thank Representative Burkle and speak in support of his bill, House File 192, which has energized cities throughout the state of Minnesota who for years have sought the budget relief that this bill brings. First, I'm here representing the City of Elk River, and a goal of our City Council is set back in early 2024 to reduce or eliminate our cost participation on state and county roadway projects. Our work towards that effort set by the Council includes conversations like this one today, an attempt to influence decisions at levels of government well outside the City of Elk River limits. Second, I'm here representing the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. Throughout our organization, we've heard more stories from the largest to the smallest cities on the negative effects that these policies are having on their budgets and ability to do maintenance on their own systems. Stories that are supported with facts, like at the statewide level, about 20% or just over 20% of state aid dollars, which are intended for city infrastructure projects, are being extracted to pay for the cost participation obligations on the state and county projects. Every dollar we put towards these projects is one less dollar we have to maintain our own assets. As engineers, we're good at doing our work and solving our own problems. And to this end, City Engineers has been actively working with our state and county staff partners to better articulate the impacts being felt throughout the state and help influence policies to eliminate the financial burdens. This includes continued involvement in the MnDOT Cost Participation Policy Work Group and engaging with the Minnesota County Engineers Association. Unfortunately, staff discussions around policy adjustments continue to fall short of the target established by House File 192. When we were made aware of its introduction, we quickly recognized this as an opportunity to share our story with you all. I'd encourage all of you to reach out to any city engineer or city representative in your district, as there are far more details, numbers, statistics, and depth to their stories than I have time to share today, but they're ever compelling to support the merits of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the testimony. This is obviously an issue for our local partners. I believe we have Mr. Schaffner, Director of MnDOT's Office of Transportation Systems Management. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll have a few committee questions. Again, we're going to lay this over, but members, if you do have some questions, we will make a little bit of time for that. Please introduce yourself. Welcome back to the committee, and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Yeah. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Philip Schaffner. I'm the director of MnDOT's Office of Transportation System Management. I am also currently leading the update to MnDOT's cost participation policy, working with cities and counties and townships to do a detailed and thorough review of our policy. And we've identified a number of opportunities to lower costs for local partners. We've also been working and trying to pilot different approaches to address the concerns, particularly of non-state aid cities and low and smaller cities, recognizing the fiscal burden that is placed on them when we are working in their communities. We do have some concerns about the bill and its potential impact to our capital program. As I was already noted, local participation on projects can be in the tens of millions of dollars per year. It can run between 3% and 5% of our overall state road construction budget. And so MnDOT covering a greater share of those costs or all of those costs will mean that we will have to deliver fewer projects than are currently programmed, unless there is also an increase in the state road construction funding to offset those local contributions. A potential unintended consequence of this also may be that we reduce the scale or scope of some projects, potentially shifting to shorter term fixes or doing less work within municipal boundaries to be able to stay within our fiscal constraints. On average, around 40 projects per year have local contribution. And so there is a significant impact of this. We are also particularly concerned about the requirements to cover items that we cannot cover using trunk highway funds. And the bill does envision that and identifies potential funding from the general fund or for other sources. However, we're concerned about a scenario where the legislature does not authorize spending to the level that we would need to cover those items and the implications that would mean for us, needing to delay or cancel projects that we could not pay for and could not cover those costs. We also have an inability to accurately forecast some of these beyond a year or two in terms of some of these local costs, particularly local utility costs, that some of the detailed design is often done by the communities themselves, and we don't get till later in the game. So being able to provide you accurate estimates for the second year of the biennium, for example, may be limited. We also appreciate Representative Burkle for meeting with us and discussing some of our concerns around how some of the language may be interpreted very broadly. For example, the language around any cost necessitated as a result of the project, which could have long-term tails beyond the construction itself. I recognize that we are under short time frame here, so I will thank you again for the opportunity to provide some comments. I stand ready to answer questions, and again, appreciate Representative Burkle's willingness to work with us.
Thank you, Mr. Schaffner. And if you just stay there, if there are some committee questions, what I think I would like to do is have our fiscal nonpartisan, Mr. Lee, just kind of overview the fiscal note for committee members, and then we'll go to a couple questions, and then we'll move on to the next bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, in your packets should be a fiscal note for House File 192. On the front page, you can see a summary of estimated costs from the Department of Transportation. The first line is $25 million a year from the general fund and about $50,000,000, $226,000 a year from the Trunk Highway Fund and two FTEs. On the second page of the fiscal note, about halfway down the that page, you can see the narrative of the assumptions that MnDOT is using for those estimates. And on the next page, you can see the assumption of about $50 million in trunk highway costs a year That's about halfway down page 3. For trunk highway funds for local work currently funded with local resources, or in another line, potentially federal resources that would the trunk highway fund would then be required to pay for, and then $25 million a year in estimated general fund costs because the trunk highway fund is not eligible to relocate utilities. And then below that, you can see the assumption for the two additional FTEs on the for the Department of Transportation, and a narrative on long-term fiscal considerations and local fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Cagle, do you want to go after Representative Jones or first? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Burkle, for bringing this bill. I think, you know, we've all heard a lot about the cost share problems and kind of the surprise billing that's happening on that end. And so I do think this bill has merit. I'm just not sure about the tact that it's taking. And so I know this bill is being laid over, and I think it would be really great if we could work on this to solve this cost share problem. I'm just a little worried about the fiscal note. I think there are things that we can do to make sure that our locals know and can anticipate cost sharing. But I just kind of have a little bit of an issue with them not having any skin in the game. So I think it's really kind of more of a front end thing where we need to kind of make sure that we're working in partnership with locals and not just like surprising them at the end. And so I'd really love to work with you on this bill, and hopefully we can get something that we can all agree on at the end of the session. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Burkle, for bringing this. I think it is a useful discussion for us to be having. I actually talked with my own city, Minneapolis, about what they thought about this bill, and similar to many other cities, they're also feeling pinched by this cost participation. And I also wanted to commend MnDOT for the cost participation working group that you've been convening. At least my city was saying that's been a really good process. And so I'm curious, what is the timeline for that process, and are we anticipating any recommendations that we could be incorporating into policy?
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. And Representative Jones, I was curious about the same thing. What's the time frame on this work group and recommendations to us, if you could respond to Representative Jones?
Yeah. Chair and Representative Jones, thank you for the question. And in fact, I had it in my notes, and I apologize for not saying it. So we started the work middle of last year, and we are anticipating wrapping up the policy update towards the end of this year or early next year. This is a complicated subject. The conversations can go quite long and quite in-depth. There's a lot of opinions and perspectives. And so we're taking a slow, deliberative process, making sure that everyone within MnDOT has an opportunity to review potential changes and our local partners have opportunities to review. So going through this year is the plan, and to come and have a revised policy early 2026.
Mr. Schaefer, some of the previous testifiers talked about using their municipal dollars for county road areas and highway. If you're not able to say, maybe Mr. Lee. So at least in the metro, there's the new sales tax. Are these counties able to use some of that sales tax on any of these projects?
Chair Kosnick, we need to look closer at the specific use of those funds and whether what they were limited to. But to the extent that they are allowable for use of general transportation or for road funding, they would be eligible to use to match state highway construction projects to pay for the local share.
Maybe it wasn't quite fair to ask you about that. Mr. Lee, are you able to provide the new sales tax that was levied 2023? Put in place in 2024, at least in the 0.75% sales tax, are counties able to use any of those dollars to help out in some of this local cost participation?
Mr. Chair and members, I will double check the uses of the metropolitan sales tax. So this would be of the 7-county metro area sales tax, of which 17% goes towards counties. There are three metro counties. There are three allowable uses for that. One of them is rehabilitating roadways, and I will double check to see if it is would cost participation would be allowed. I would imagine it would be, but I'll double check.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Yeah, if you could double check and just let the committee know. I'm thinking that's, if you have a more optimistic answer than what I think, that would be great, but I think we're limited with those funds to help in this, but again, if you have a more rosy analysis, that would be welcome news. Members, any other questions? Otherwise, we will lay House File. We will lay House File 192 over. Representative Jones, you already spoke. You're not on the. Okay, we didn't take you off the list. Okay, House File 192 is laid over, and we'll continue to work on it. Representative Burkle, thank you for bringing this issue in front of us, and hopefully, over time, we will have a better resolution for our local partners.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we have House File, not 268, that's my file. We'll go to 494, Representative West. Representative West, this bill will be just laid over within the committee, so I appreciate you bringing this bill forward so that we can talk about some of the issues in the bill. And we are ready for your testimony. Introduce yourself and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for having me, committee.
I'm sorry, Representative West, there are two amendments, I think. I forgot. Do you want to introduce it, or do you want me to add the amendments first?
I would like to briefly, I'd like to talk on the second of the two amendments, just.
Go ahead then, Representative West.
So, first, let the record show I did not show up to committee empty-handed. We must, everybody who comes.
Representative Myers, can you take note of that, please? Okay, Vice Chair Myers is. It's noted. Please proceed.
So please enjoy. Haichus are a delicious candy from Japan. They were originally developed as a chewing gum that you could swallow. So as you enjoy a fruity deliciousness, note that it's a beautiful piece of history and international culture. So how about that? I have two amendments. One, the A1 is a clarifying amendment. And the A2 is an amendment that claws back some of the funds that are remaining, as they're not allowed. Not a lot remaining. Chair Cagle actually did bring that up while I was walking back here. She said, there's only $600,000 left in the account. And it's, considering our budget situation, I think we could use that money. So I'll let you go through the amendments. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative West. I will move for you the A1 amendment. It's a technical amendment and has all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye. Any opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A2 amendment. The A2 amendment, as was stated, redirects any of the funds left over back to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The A2 is adopted. Representative West, your amendments are adopted. Please proceed then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for putting the bill in the shape in which I would like it. So we find ourselves in a tough fiscal situation, as we all will know. We had an $18 billion budget surplus, and after single-party control of state government, we now have a $5 billion budget deficit we're staring in. And that's even with raising taxes by $10 billion. So House File 494 will prohibit future funding and claw back any funding that's left for the Reconnect Rondo project. And it's not because it's not a noble project, but looking at our impending budget deficit, we have a fiscal responsibility to the state to limit excess spending where we can and prioritize what money we do have. We have to deal with it. So if you look at the price tag on the project, we're looking at over $400 million is what they're saying. That's a lot of money. We could do quite a bit with $400 million. And this is just for a single community, a single area. Well, in the legislature, I've worked hard to get money for Highway 65. And after years and years and years, got a little over $200 million, which was great. That's half this to do a stretch of road that is a critical need for a whole region of the state. I know everybody here probably has a road in their district that they need done. You know, 169, 212, Highway 5, all these roads could be, they really do need work. We have the fifth largest road network in the state. I've heard we might have moved up to fourth in the country. And that's an expensive operation. And when we're at a $5 billion budget deficit, we need to find money where we can. And $400 million spent on a single project for a single area, well, I am sure it is good for the area. I would love $400 million in my district as well. When we're looking at a $5 billion budget deficit, it does not make sense. So I would ask your members to support this. I'm pretty sure it's just being laid over. But that is the crux of the bill. Let's be fiscally responsible given the situation we find ourselves in now.
Excuse me. Thanks for the treat. It's caught in my throat. Representative West, thank you for the introduction. Members, you know, following on the backs of the previous bill that we heard, I think that's the relevance is more highlighted. You know, next week we will, or later this week, we will have the updated forecast. So part of the reason why we wanted to hear the bill. I believe we have MnDOT with us. If they could, I've asked them to kind of give us an update on this project. And they rightfully so want to also ask them to talk about the Reimagine I-94 project and very separate projects in the minds of MnDOT. But if you could just base the committee with the update on kind of where those projects are. I guess we hear the cost of $400-$450 million on the Rondo part. Mr. Radin, please introduce yourself, and if you could just give us a little bit of an overview. Hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot, but give us some grounding on those two projects.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And starting with Rethinking 94, so this is an effort that has been underway for quite some time already. We are in the midst of an environmental process governed by NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act, that spells out how we go through an environmental review process. And so that is underway. Just in December, we announced six alternatives that we are proposing to move forward to the next stage of the environmental process. And four that we are recommending not be moved forward. So that is just a recommendation. There will be significant community outreach over the next several months and then a final decision to come up with a firm recommendation and decision on those alternatives would be made approximately a little less than a year from now. So of the six alternatives that we're recommending to move forward, the land bridge concept would work with any of those alternatives. So we're not at a point yet where we can say definitively whether, you know, a land bridge would be included as part of a future project or not. But again, any of the six alternatives that we're recommending to move forward could accommodate a land bridge. So that's where the department is. There is a separate and somewhat independent process that's being led by Reconnect Rondo to develop a land bridge. They've received state and federal funds to do some work on that. We are certainly coordinating with them and trying to make sure that the process that we're engaged in is coordinated to a certain extent with their effort, although we have to be a little bit careful because we can't sort of predetermine the outcome of our environmental process to recommend a specific project at this time. So we're certainly talking to them and coordinating with them. We also are the fiscal agent for the grant the legislature has provided previously. So we're coordinating with them from that aspect as well.
Mr. Radin, I was trying to search on your website. Is this information, your six alternatives and four not, is it easier identified, or can you send the committee a link, because I wasn't able to find it during a quick search? But I imagine something's on your website.
Mr. Chair, yes, there's the website is almost maybe too big. There's so much information there, it's sometimes hard to find what you're looking for, but I'll certainly send a link with those alternatives to the committee.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Representative West. Welcome to the committee. So I don't know whether the Reconnect Rondo is the right thing to do or not, but you're here asking us, suggesting that we should stop an investment of about $500,000, correct? I actually want to ask that question. I'll continue. So if that's what we're being asked to stop, do you know what the value is of the Reconnect Rondo project, how much it's expected to return to the community, to the state, over the next, say, 20 years?
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft. Yes, the goal is to acquire at least this small portion of money that's remaining. I am always very skeptical when people say, spend X dollars amount and the state will see X dollars in return. Those numbers almost never bear themselves out. So what we do know is that it's expected to cost over $400 million. And when you look at the needs around the state, which I'm sure this committee has spent a lot of time already talking about the insane transportation needs around the state, that $400 million would be far better spent for the state as a whole on improving that rather than on a very localized and specific project.
One follow-up, and yeah, don't go far, Mr. Rudine.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll just note that you answered no, you don't know. You're not coming to this with information about what we're giving up. I understand what it would cost. And then the other question I would ask is, do you know how much the fact of disconnecting Rondo, of what we did to that community, has cost that community over the past number of the past decades that's been in place?
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for your question. This is actually my first session not serving on the Transportation Committee. So I was here for a lot of conversation on Reconnect Rondo, heard from many testifiers on this specific project. And if the localized area wants to take on a $400 million project, they can, but I think there are better ways to help these communities than spend $400 million on something like this.
Mr. Dean, I have a question off of that. So if they built the land bridge, who would own it, and then who would be responsible for the maintenance of that? Is that the state, or is that would that be the city of St. Paul, or is it Ramsey County? How would that work?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that we've determined that yet. Typically, the department does own facilities over interstate right-of-way. There was some federal guidance on that the state DOT should be the owner of anything that's sort of in the interstate right-of-way. Now, my understanding is that has become a bit more flexible in recent history, and so we've actually had some conversations. For example, there's a new bridge connecting Woodbury and Oakdale as part of the Gold Line project, and the department wasn't sure we should be the owner of that bridge, and so we talked to the Met Council and to the counties and the cities to see if somebody else was interested in being the owner of that facility, and I think we couldn't reach a resolution there, so I think the department is going to be the owner, but, you know, that's a discussion we can certainly have, and I think that's, you know, some of the language in the bill about the prohibition on sort of studying, planning, and that sort of thing. You know, those are exactly the types of conversations that we would want to have with local governments and the Reconnect Rondo organization.
Thank you, Mr. Rudine. I'm sorry, Representative Kraft, I'll give you a second follow-up or third. I'm kind of last count, but you can have one more. We'll take testimony, but just since Mr. Rudine was up there and giving an overview, if members have questions for Mr. Rudine. By the way, you know, if you look on the video screen, I'm highly distracted by your adorable little baby. Representative Cagle. Okay. We'll move to testifiers if there's no other questions right now for Mr. Rudine. Mr. Phelan.
Yeah.
Mr. Phelan.
Red nose.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony, please.
Chair Kosnick and committee members, my name is John Phelan, and I am an economist at the Center for the American Experiment, a public policy organization based here in Minnesota. I am here to express my strong support for HF 494. First, some context. In February 2023, Minnesota Management and Budget forecast a state government budget surplus of $17 billion for the 2024-2025 biennium. In that historic session, the DFL trifecta spent every penny of that surplus, and between 2019 and 2024, Minnesota's state government spending per person and adjusted for inflation increased by 23%. The historic trifecta also hiked taxes and fees by $10 billion, but even this was not enough to cover the explosion in state government spending. And in November 2024, Minnesota Management and Budget forecast a state government budget deficit of $3.5 billion in the 2028-2029 biennium, or $5.1 billion if you account for inflation. This deficit, the result of gross fiscal mismanagement by the state government over the last 4 years, is the central fact of state government finance. Never mind speculation on what it might generate or what the costs of building I-94 decades.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, are we speaking about this bill?
Or? Representative Kraft, the testifier is testifying. Please don't interrupt. Please proceed, Mr. Phelan.
Given these circumstances, Minnesota's politicians should be looking to spend less money, not more, and certainly not on schemes such as Reconnect Rondo. To the project itself. Reconnect Rondo will cost at least an estimated $450 million on top of the $6.2 million already appropriated. But if we want 13 acres of park and open space, a business incubator hub or marketplace, and a hub for the 21st century careers in tech, engineering, and clean energy, while also providing pathways into traditional skilled trades like plumbing, electrical work, and construction, end quote, there are far cheaper ways of getting them than building a 300-foot-long tunnel, during the construction of which I-94 will be closed, and which will block trucks carrying hazardous materials and increase the severity of motor vehicle accidents. One thing Minnesota is not short of is land. Reconnect Rondo has always been sold on the notion that the cost will be split between state and federal government. If, as is likely and understandable, given $2 trillion budget deficits forecast until at least 2035, federal funding for the project is pulled, the entire cost of this project will fall on taxpayers across the state. After 4 years of fiscal excess, it is time for Minnesota's politicians to start acting responsibly. I urge you to support HF 494 and stand with the taxpayers of Minnesota.
Mr. Phelan, thank you for your testimony. And Representative Kraft and members, you, generally we just let testifiers, you don't have to agree with them, but we let them finish their testimony. Next we have Rashida Jenkins. Hello, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony. And we will get through as many of the testifiers as we can, and then the bill will be laid over. So I think we were pretty good on time with testifiers. So go ahead and please proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Rashida Jenkins, and I'm here in opposition to the bill of HF 494. I'm not here to talk about the money, because it's about the people. Being a daughter of Rondo, I was raised with such confidence, such love, to be seen and to be understood and to be in a community that I knew loved me, that raised me in love. And this is after 1956, when 94 devastated over 300 businesses, over 700 homes. I was raised in a community of love. And when I hear people talk about the money and how we need to be responsible and how we need to look out for the fiscal budget, what I'm not hearing is the lives that were impacted by what was created through the community. I believe that the community is the fabric that is the insulator of family. And when you are raised in a family, in a community where you are loved and supported, you turn around and you create love and support for your family and the rest of the community and the world. We are not living in a silo. One place that is impacted impacts everyone. And when we reconnect Rondo, that will have such a huge loving impact on the rest of the world, not just one town, not just one city, not just one community, because we are looking out for the bigger picture. This is not just about Rondo. This is about Minnesota. This is about the United States of America. And we are the catalyst for change. You have a great opportunity today to make a difference. Thank you.
Ms. Jenkins, just to clarify, and I might have missed it, could you state what group you're with, just for the record?
I am the president and founder of Growth Industries, but I'm here on behalf of Reconnect Rondo.
Okay, thank you. And if I missed that earlier in your introduction,
I don't think I stated that. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Keith Baker, executive director of Reconnect Rondo. Welcome back to the Transportation Committee. Please, you know the drill, state your name, who you're with, and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Indeed. Thank you, Chair Kosnick and members of the committee. So appreciate being here before you. As mentioned, my name is Keith Baker. I'm the executive director for Reconnect Rondo. And before I go too much farther, I do want to just give you the numbers, Member Kraft, that you were asking for. When we talk about a cost split in any project, it's an 80-20 oftentimes available and can be applied. This project, in order to create the structure, is $250 million and not the $400 million, because obviously there's development on top and then programming from there. So just for the record, it's $250 million is part of the cost split, 80% being federal, 20% being state, which is $63 million. As the executive director of Reconnect Rondo, I oppose House File 494, which aims to stop funding for the Rondo project. This isn't just a transportation project. It's an opportunity to create sustainable economic, social, and public benefits. Important to note is that Reconnect Rondo's project aligns with the goals of the Minnesota Department of Transportation, which was established in 1976, 10 years after the devastation caused to the Rondo community. The project emphasizes creating safer transportation options by improving infrastructure and connectivity within the Rondo neighborhood. The project enhances access to mobility for all residents through the provisions of intermodal and multimodal transportation facilities. By revitalizing Rondo, it ensures economic opportunity and quality of life without placing undue burden on any community. Moreover, it improves connectivity and access to transit services for the Rondo community and supports economic development by creating new business opportunities. Projects like Rondo also generate thousands of jobs, and we've heard some testimony with respects to this. But not only during the construction, but beyond, revitalizing the local economy and bolstering property value while mitigating displacements. Social benefits include reuniting a community, promoting safety, cohesion, while providing enhanced access and healthcare, education, and essential services. Elevating overall quality of life. Publicly, the project enhances mobility for everyone. It offers improved transportation options, addresses environmental goals, and fosters a healthier environment through increased access and green space. Reflecting back to 1956, the Rondo community was a vibrant neighborhood until it was bisected by I-94. Causing lasting harm. Sadly, it isn't the first time we've seen deliberate targeting of a community to hinder its self-determined progress. House File 494 is yet another example of such targeting. As someone with 40 years of a career here in Minnesota. I spent 18 years with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I can say that I have never witnessed such intentional targeting of a specific community in my time with the Department of Transportation. This project states a profound challenge, or this project is profoundly challenged by that targeting. And it's important for us to recognize that there was a formal apology that occurred by then Commissioner Zelli in 2015 and Mayor Chris Coleman in 2015. One of the things that I've really recognized is that we've seen the success of projects like Target Field in revitalizing Minneapolis, projects like Destination Medical Center in Rochester, the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation, Triple R in the Iron Range, the National Sports Facility or Center in Blaine, they were all established and funded by state resources and well managed as a result of that. Additionally, Dakota County, CDC, and Scott County, EDI, are public-private partnerships that are examples of how state funds can effectively be used to drive economic opportunity and create lasting social, economic, and public benefits. It only makes sense that the community of Rondo also is able to use those kinds of tools and mechanisms to revitalize itself. Furthermore, Reconnect Rondo intends to really try to leverage systems, processes, tools, and resources that we know are available to all kinds of communities, and we see ourselves in a position to really support that as well. Let me just close by indicating this. Investment in the Reconnect Rondo project will yield substantial benefits. As Frank Dolmer, Director of Urban and Regional Infrastructure Finance at the Humphrey Institute, wrote in 2023, and I quote, "While infrastructure alone cannot heal community wounds, innovative uses of right-of-way space can help reconnect divided communities while creating usable space with multiple social benefits," unquote. And I would add economic and public benefits as well. Chair Kosnick and members of the committee, I encourage you to help create a legacy of opportunity, vibrance, prosperity, and progress for Rondo and the state of Minnesota. I urge you to reject House File 494 and champion the Rondo project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. If I just have a quick question before we move to next testifier, and I was happy to have your testimony go beyond the 2 minutes, so thank you for being here.
Thank you.
But just listening to your testimony, you know, that the whole project is not just a transportation project. Mm-hmm. Are you opposed to only using a portion of trunk highway funds and then the rest, because there are other factors that are included in this very visionary concept, that they would be not just transportation dollars, maybe other general funds, economic development dollars? You know, I think that might be the purpose in the question of the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Kosnick. I think at this particular point, it's really premature to really firm up what we think is going to be necessary. Certainly a wide range of tools as well as resources are something that we certainly would invite to be considered as a part of this funded project.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Next, we have Marvin Roger Anderson, Executive Director of Rondo Center for Diverse Expressions. Welcome to the testifying table. And next, Mr. Anderson, we'll have Sharon Garth. If you want to proceed and take that other chair, and then after that, we'll have Mr. Harper. Mr. Anderson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. If we could keep it under 2 minutes, that would be great. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Kosnick and members of the committee. Excuse me. My name is Marvin Anderson. I was born in St. Paul, and I'm a lifelong member of the Rondo community. I'm a grandson of Ernest Jones, who came to Minnesota in 1901 to work on the Minnesota State Capitol as a mason. I am the son of a father who in 1947 got a loan from the Federal Home Administration and built 12 townhomes on Rondo. I'm the grandson of a woman who built a home at 1020 Rondo. Both my grandmother's home, my father's 12 townhomes were destroyed when I-94 was routed through the community and wiped those homes out. I am the co-founder of the Rondo Day Celebration. I am the board chair of Reconnect Rondo. I'm also the past Minnesota State Law Librarian for 24 years, working here for the state of Minnesota. Considering my history and my background, you know what I'm about to say right now. I want you to reject House File 494. Chair Kosnick, you once said that Minnesotans deserve a transportation system that is responsive to the needs of the people. What are the needs of Rondo? Rondo needs the community trust that it has built up with MnDOT, with Met Council, with state and local entities, and working on this project for the last 15 years. Rondo needs to know that the hard work that we put into this committee, put into this work, is going to be recognized and given some consideration. Rondo needs a forward-looking solution to the problems in our community. We need to employ the most up-to-date technology. We need to use AI. We need to use all the solutions that are necessary to rebuild our community and take it from where it is now to where it can be. Rondo needs an economic engine to get out started again. We need small businesses. We need entrepreneurs. We need the opportunity to grow businesses within the Rondo community so that the self-determination of our community can be obtained once again. Rondo needs housing, affordable housing. This project could probably bring over 500 affordable homes to a community. And the city needs money, and our project will deliver at least $4 to $5 million a year to the city of St. Paul in the form of new taxes. Rondo needs equitable access to the funding that is available. This land bridge is designed to restore connectivity, enhance mobility, improve safety, and mitigate pollution. These objectives, they align with the very purpose of state transportation funding. To deny funding would be to deny Rondo the same opportunities afforded to other infrastructure projects across the state. House File 494 is a step backwards, one that disregards the vision, the hard work, and the aspirations of the Rondo community. This project is more than just a land bridge. It's about reclaiming a lost neighborhood, reconnecting a divided community, and revitalizing a region with new opportunities for growth and success. I urge this committee to reject the funding prohibition and stand with the Rondo community in its mission to reclaim, reconnect, and revitalize the neighborhood. Let's not let past mistakes, let's forget past mistakes, and let's move forward with solutions that promote equality, economic vitality, social and cultural stability, an increase in housing, the mitigation of environmental hazards, all that are now present in the Rondo community. The Rondo Land Bridge is a step in the right direction. By rejecting 494, you'll join us in our process. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Anderson, thank you for being with us today and your testimony. We have about 5 minutes, so we'll go to Ms. Sharon Garth, then Representative West, the closing comments, and then we'll lay the file over. We're laying the file over.
Mr. Chair, this is a really important bill, and I think my members would like to speak to it.
Well, if you'd like to cut off testimony, then you can have, want to have a question now?
I will go ahead and take my time right here. So This bill is incredibly hypocritical. It's targeting a community of color that has asked for this since the highway department went through and destroyed their community. I also want to bring up the fact that the Center for American Experiment, some of the comments made by their president, Mr. John Hinderrecker, says slavery is now 150 years in the past and legal segregation 50 years. Yet the social pathologies exhibited by the African-American community, especially black men, have gotten worse, not better, and these dark eras have receded into the past. The myth of black victimization by whites and determining an uptick in crime in Minneapolis is due to radical hostility promoted by the Obama administration and Black Lives Matter organizations. Those are quotes directly credited to the Center for the American Experiment's president, John Hinderkamper, or whatever his last name is. And so I'm really frustrated because you just got $200 million last year for Highway 65. That's only one portion of that. You know that you're going to be coming back to the legislature asking for more, right? Because the Highway 10, that tangle, and then the part up by Ham Lake. So what I'm hearing is blame communities deserve a $400 million project. But we want to take away $500 million from a community of color that has been targeted. And I really think this is irresponsible. And, you know, given your social media history, I don't think this is a very good look for you, Representative West. Thank you.
Representative members, we are here to debate. The audience will be quiet or you will be escorted. Representative Cagle, we should refrain from invoking motives. Representative West, close the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've done prohibitions before. Southwest light rail expenditures, targeting a community, totally ridiculous. We're trying to be responsible with tax dollars of our state. $600,000 left of, $6.7 million, and we still don't have a firm idea on what's going to be done. We're just trying to be responsible here, and we have a lot of money. If we're not over yet, though, I think it is. I will cede my remainder of the time to the testifier.
Representative West, please close out your bill.
All right.
Oh, are you done with your comments?
Yeah.
Members, we will lay over House File 494. I apologize to members of the public that didn't get a chance to testify. Appreciate
Mr. Chair,
your time
could
today.
We go and over committee by 5 or 10 minutes and allow the people to speak who have come here to speak. We've got a couple minutes left before, and if they could have a couple minutes,
that'd be great.
Representative
Tapke, we have some members that, if you have someplace, I'm amenable to that. If you do have to leave, just please go where you need to go. But if you could give us 5 more minutes, I would appreciate that.
Thank you.
House File 494 is laid over. Ms. Garth, I appreciate your time here today. Please proceed with your testimony, but keep it as short as possible. And we have 3 other members on the committee, on the list, but we will be going over as our committee time is passed.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Garth, and I'm a lifelong resident of Rondo. I was born and raised in St. Paul, and right here today, I am representing the community, which we call Central Village Neighborhood and Park, which is abounded by the Freeway 94 as one of its ends. My point here today, of course, is to stand with the Reconnect Rondo project. We have, as a community, been through 50 years, which I have lived through, of disenfranchisement. From 94 and the division of a community just split in half until now we sit where we're losing business after business. The economy is dropping, and we have spent over 8 years working to put together a plan that would help the economic, the social, the cultural fabric of our community. And we're here to say that our community is important, that we have stood through all that has been given to us, but now we want to rise above, and we want our community to rise and to shine. We need additional housing, affordable housing in our community. We need education and jobs at a higher level than what is being provided to us now. And this plan has really addressed all of the needs of the community, not now, not just now, but for the next 20 to 30 years, so that our community can thrive again and be alive. And so we're here to say that we have stood as a beacon in St. Paul through all that we have been through, and now we're just wanting to move forward, elevate ourselves to where we should be. So I'm really urging you to consider the significant impact of what H.F. 494 would have on the Rondo community and the broad region, because we are all connected. And prohibiting that funding for Reconnect Rondo undermines years of trust building and equity-centered planning. I implore you to reject the HF 494 and stand with the Rondo community in their vision to reclaim, reconnect, and revitalize our neighborhood.
Thank you, Ms. Garth.
I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are you Mr. Harper?
No, I'm not. I'm Jonathan Palmer.
Okay. Why don't you go proceed? Is Mr. Harper here? If you could, there you go. Excellent. If you can keep it under 2 minutes, I think the committee can accommodate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Jonathan Palmer. I am the principal of Nonprofit Heroes for Hire. But prior to that, I led Hallie Q. Brown Community Center for 15 years, historic African-American organization in the community. This project has been a central focus of people within Rondo working to rebuild and reconnect after the highway and other efforts were put into the community to destroy it. Recently, in 2022, there were amendments to try and remove the funding from this as well. Senator Newman, Representative Jasinski, Chair Kosnick, I think even at that time you said that there were projects in your community that this money would go better for. The question I have as we're going here with this third time is, what does the Republican Party have against the black community in Rondo?
Mr. Harper, if you could speak to the bill, we would appreciate it. Otherwise, we'll move
on. I'm Mr. Palmer. Different black people look different.
Mr. Palmer.
Yes, thank you. I am speaking to the bill. And as you let the gentleman, Mr. Phelan, who also has referred to programs that prioritize African Americans, people of color, women, LGBTQ people as being racist, I think that this still speaks to the issue. We're talking about rebuilding a community, and we're talking about what has been done to a community and continues to be done to a community. This is an effort that will not just serve Rondo. Rondo has been the historic gathering place of the African-American community from all over the state, but people have always come into Rondo to enjoy the shops, to enjoy the stores, to enjoy the funds. It is a place that has been a central gathering spot that people have come to. So when you talk about this as being something just for one community, you're not being honest. This is a project that is necessary. This is a project that does good. And it is a project that should not be targeted by different members of a specific party in order to defund it. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Mr. Harper, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. And then we'll be recessed. Thank you.
Yes, good afternoon, members of the Transportation Policy Committee. My name is Robert Harper, founder and owner of RDTH Consulting. We had the privilege of consulting for MnDOT and the University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs on the research team who calculated the disadvantaged business enterprise goals for 2022 to 2024. As you heard in Keith Baker's testimony, the urgency of supporting Reconnect Rondo is clear. And while I understand the purpose of House File I understand that the purpose of House File 494 is not specific to contracting and procurement. I wanted to uplift some of our findings to provide context around the state's continued disinvestment in black communities and black businesses. Black History Month just ended, and my concern is the way that we typically have a tendency to speak to black history in this era of the 1950s and 60s, referred to as the Civil Rights Movement. And by talking about these discriminatory acts in the context of the 1950s and 60s, the discussion is actually framed in a way that indirectly absolves current government leaders and elected officials of the ongoing discrimination that our communities face today. Reconnect Rondo is just not just about remedying the initial harm felt by the construction of I-94. It is about inspiring generational wealth, prosperity, and opportunities for communities that are overlooked, were overlooked then and are overlooked today. The focus of my testimony today is focused on the continued underinvestment in black communities like Rondo. And from 2017 to 2020, our research found that black contractors received zero out of 742 MnDOT contracts that totaled over $3 billion spent by MnDOT. To the contrary, Reconnect Rondo has a robust plan for utilizing diverse contractors in the development, construction, and post-construction of the land bridge. Reconnect Rondo also has a community-informed and human-centered approach to remedying the past and ongoing discriminatory actions of state transportation systems. I ask that the Transportation Committee support that and by rejecting this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Harper. Mr. Chair, the meeting is adjourned.